Okay, welcome to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We're having with us a special guest this evening. It's Frank Barat, and he's a human rights activist based in London, UK. He's also the coordinator of the Russell Tribunal on Palestine. He is the editor of Gaza in Crisis with Noam Chomsky and Ilan Pappi, and Corporate Complicity in Israel's Occupation. Good to have you with us, Frank.
Good to be here.
Frank, let's start with what is the Russell Tribunal on Palestine, and if you can give a brief overview of the Russell Tribunal on Vietnam and South America.
The Russell Tribunal is on Palestine is a civil society sort of tribunal, or a popular tribunal that was created for the Palestine one is in 2009, a few months after the Gaza massacre, also known as Operation Cast Lead. So it intends to use international law to show that the conflict, actually to solve the conflict, is a pretty straightforward matter if people were ready to actually follow international law. And mainly we're focusing on third parties, so countries, corporations, UN bodies that are complicit in letting Israel's impunity continue unchallenged. So the Russell Tribunal stems from the Russell Tribunal, the Bertrand Russell Peace Foundation that started in the late 60s with the Russell Tribunal in Vietnam that was led by Bertrand Russell and Jean-Paul Sartre and focused on the war of aggression that the U.S. launched in Vietnam. And a few years later, the tribunal then concentrated on Latin America and all the military regimes. The most well-known one is obviously Pinochet. And from then on, it at the time was really to sort of educate public opinion. And I think, I wasn't born at the time, but both tribunals had a big impact in campuses and really played a key part in, and the Vietnam one in making the movement or the peace movement a lot bigger and a lot more, in a way, educated.
The Russell Tribunal on Palestine deals with the complicities of countries and corporations and sometimes international organizations in supporting of Israel's violation of international law towards the Palestinian people. To do so, you had already three sessions held in different locations around the world. What were the conclusions of each one?
Okay, yeah, so the first session took place in Barcelona, in Spain, in March 2000. It's not in March. Is it in March? Yeah, it was in March 2010. And it focused on the EU complicity and the EU role, so EU as a body and also the 27 member states, in letting, again, Israel's impunity continue. What the tribunal found after 3 days of testimonies, etc., is that the EU, even if most EU member states tend to issue very good statements, you know, we support the two-state solution, we'll be behind the Palestinian, they need to have the right to self-determination, their actions are completely different, and they do back Israel via exchange programs, research associations, trade associations, etc. So, the jury called for the EU to radically change its relation to Israel. So I'll be brief. So I'll jump to the London session that focused on corporate complicity, because it's also important. And the tribunal is also here to empower civil society. And a lot of people ask you, what can I do about it? So if you talk about corporations, that people know, you know, that people see in the street, that people buy from, and you explain how those corporations buy taking part into an illegal situation, for example, building the wall, providing security for checkpoints, are complicit and are violating international laws themselves. It's then easier to go back to, you know, to make the conflict and to make its resolution an international question. And you can tell people in London, in New York, in France, you know, this company is guilty, boycott it, make sure people divest from it, etc. The third session took place a few months ago in Cape Town. And for this session, we went back to really sort of a more humane concept. And what was the root of the conflict? Why this is happening? Why there's an occupation? Why the Palestinians have been living under military rule in the West Bank for decades. So we talked about apartheid, and we tried to examine if Israel's conduct towards the Palestinians amounted to a breach of apartheid under international law. And the jury did conclude that what Israel was doing towards the Palestinian people as a whole, and that's the important fact. A lot of studies before had concentrated on the West Bank or the occupied territories, but the tribunal did take into account the Palestinian people as a whole, which means, you know, the people living in the OPT, but also the refugees, the diaspora. So it's about 9 million Palestinians as a whole. And the finding was that Israel conduct and Israel laws, etc., do affect not only people living in the West Bank and occupied Palestine, but also people, you know, Palestinians living in Israel itself, and also the refugees. So the laws and the conduct of Israel does affect about 9 million Palestinians.
So you mentioned that in Cape Town session, you brought the human stories or the human concept of the conflict. The question that was asked during the session, and I'm quoting here, are Israel practices against the Palestinian people in breach of the prohibition on apartheid under international law? End of quote. Could you talk about the process that the jury go through in order to come up with a decision like this?
Okay. It's an interesting question because people do ask us, how does the jury in 2.5-3 days can come up with conclusions and findings that are sometimes 16, 20, and the London one's about 120 pages long. And, I mean, the jury, most of them are sort of, I mean, the old jury are prominent people that follow the tribunal sometimes from quite a long distance because they're involved in so many stuff during the year. But we do work with a team of legal experts. We've got 3, 4, and sometimes 5 people that work with us throughout the year. So they work and they prepare sort of the legal, they propose some sort of a legal conclusion to the jury that the jury then, following 3 days of testimonies, can you know, deal with, etc. But to organize a session really take about 10 months. So from the first week when we start organizing a session, we're in touch with the jury when there is new ideas, new concepts, new. So they do receive documents, information for about 6 months. So which means that when they come to tribunal, they are ready already, and you know they already know what sort of they want to talk about and focus on.
And in your second session held in London, I think it was in November 2010, you examined the international corporate complicity in Israel's violations of the international laws. What were the most vital evidence that support this claim?
I mean, it's the thing is, and that's what the sort of pro-justice movement knows now, I hope, that we do have the facts on our side. You know, the facts are so clear. Without the PR money that Israel invests into making up stories, really, and we have the sort of Ashbara propaganda that Israel does, I think most of the public would know what's happening in Palestine, and it's only because of the mainstream media so-called balanced view of the conflict that they don't know about it, because the facts are so clear. For example, Ahava, which is a company for beauty products, the Dead Sea mineral, etc., head office is based in a settlement. So, you know, you don't really have to go further than that. Their company is based in an illegal settlement. Everyone, even in the UN, the US is a bit dodgy, but anyway, everyone agrees, at least the 99% of the international community agrees that it's those settlements are illegal. So if your head office is in a settlement, and if you actually use products that you take from Palestinian land to then export it to the UK, it seems pretty obvious that what you do is illegal. Another company, CRH, called Cement Rodstone Holdings from Ireland, is the main company that is providing cement to build the wall. So it's so clear cut. You know, you don't have to, and if you explain it this way, I mean, people can't. You know, it's not really complicated. The wall is obviously illegal. You building the wall, you illegal. You know, and G4S, it's a British Danish company that is involved in providing security services in the settlements. They're involved in providing body scans in checkpoints. So again, they're illegal, and they are now the biggest, pretty much, security company in the world. You know, you see them at the airport, you see them picking cash from one bank to another. So it's very clear cut. And I mean, there was 14 companies, I think, in the dock, and all examples were pretty straightforward, you know.
Well, you mentioned Ahafa, the Dead Sea products that they say it's made in Israel, but basically it is in the settlement. And this is a good example of some of the targeted companies that the BDS, the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, that was issued by more than 170 Palestinian organizations for international solidarity all around the world. So could you tell us the link, or how do you see the tribal, the Russell Tribunal work or help popular resistance or pro-just justice movements such as the BDS in their struggle?
And that's also the goal of the tribunal, by it's some sort of like providing the legal tools, because I think we are always stronger if there's the law on our side. And for example, the anti-apartheid movement during, you know, in South Africa had sort of the high moral ground, you know, we want freedom, justice and equality for all. But they didn't have any sort of UN resolutions. They didn't have any laws on their side till sort of 1974, when the UN Convention on Apartheid was created by the UN. So from 1948, when apartheid started, till 1974, they didn't have any UN resolution on the law on their side. They just had the moral high ground, the high moral ground. And we do have the high moral ground as well on our side, and we're also calling for justice, freedom and equality for all. But we also have hundreds of UN resolutions, hundreds of reports from human rights and humanitarian organizations. So we are a lot stronger, and we do need to use this. And you see it in sort of daily activism. Activists in the last few years now mention international law, now mention the Goldstone report, mention, and that scares Israel, because when you talk about the conflict in a sort of religious way, or if you talk about the conflict, you know, when you don't have the facts and the law, you know, it's easy to debunk you. But when you do have this on your side, it's very hard to Israel, and they call it actually lawfare, because it's like, you know, it's war for them, because the law is the law. You know, you either respect it or you don't. So the London session did help the sort of BDS movement a lot, because we the company targeted are also companies that the BDS movement targets. So we provided them with very clear information on why those corporations were doing, were involved in illegal acts, and the Cape Town session was also crucial for the BDS movement, because they talk more and more about equality for all. So, and the fact that we focused on not only on the occupied territories but the whole of the Palestinian people, I mean, the findings of the tribunal are now sort of quoted in pretty much every press release that the BNC or BDS movement sends. So yeah. The role of the tribunal is really also to empower already existing campaigns with the legal tools to be even better in their campaigns, really.
You mentioned that one of the objectives is to help the BDS, and as you said, also to empower existent work of the BDS. And you also mentioned earlier the role of the mainstream media. Do you feel that there has been a shift of attitudes of the mainstream media toward, for example, covering BDS issues, talking about these issues that one time it was a taboo to talk about anything or criticize Israel's work or violation of law?
I think, in a way, I mean, the mainstream media and the corporate media tends to, for me, I think about them as like governments, you know, if there's no many people sort of telling them, you know, that's what we want to hear, they're never going to talk about it. So they didn't talk about BDS. They're hardly talking about Palestine in sort of factual terms for a long, long time. But now you do see more and more, and it's, you know, it's not down to them, really. It's because of our work. You do see op-eds of Ali Abu Nimeh in the Washington Post, Diana Boutu in the New York Times, and I think it's really just down to us. And the media is like this, if you think about it, information, news, and journalism shouldn't be corporate driven. Otherwise, where is reality? Where is the balance? But they do. They all are corporate money driven and profit driven. So they do want something that sells. And if BDS sells, they will, you know, put forward our views. But I think that also the movement and even the tribunal, we started by saying, let's try to attract mainstream media. But when you see the indifference and the total indifference for your views and your stories, I think we're going to try to work really from the bottom up. And one day the mainstream media, like governments, will be rendered sort of useless, and they'll probably try to catch up, you know, but it'd be too late. The movement would have gone without them. And I think it'd make us stronger that, you know, we don't need the mainstream media, we don't need governments. And you see during the Arab Spring, I think the Arab Spring, actually I don't really like to call it the Arab Spring because it's like a media term in a way, but let's call it the Arab Spring. What the Arab Spring has done is really to make governments irrelevant, you know. So I think it was a good thing, yeah.
And you yourself, you also write in different mainstream media, but also blogs and more progressive websites as well. Frank, what makes Russell Tribunal on Palestine distinctive or unique in its approach toward finding justice for Palestinians?
I think what makes it different and sort of original is that we play on two levels. It's very hard. People do attack us all the time, but as usual, I think the sort of the Zionist movement has so little left. You know, they're left with the crumbs. You know, they don't have the facts. They don't have the law. So they attack individuals. You know, they attack the messenger, but they can't attack the message. You know, every time we've been attacked, they never attack the findings. You know, and that's why we tell them, you know, look at the findings and then attack us. And they can't do it. And that's why I think we are a lot stronger than other, you know, past initiatives, because we base our work with the law and with the law that has been created by powerful states. And often actually people tell us, you know, the law has been created by powerful states. So are you sure that the law is the answer? And that's also the role of the tribunal, I think. And that's where we want to go more and more, is to try to push the boundaries of the law and international changes, you know. Again, I was saying there was no convention on apartheid before 73. There was no convention on punishing Israel, you know, before a few years after, you know, the occupation started. So I think, and it's down to the people. We do make history. The law changes because we push it to change. So hopefully the tribunal could create new concepts in international law. And I think we in New York, our forthcoming session, that's where we'll try to go, actually, to push it further, to push the envelope a lot further than what people in governments are ready to hear.
Any plans for this final session? Do you know what's happening?
Yeah. We know like at 80% what's going to happen. We're working on it now. So it's going to take place in New York from the 5th of New York till the 8th. The 5th of New York, the 5th of October till the 8th of October. It's going sort of broadly because we haven't, you know, been too specific yet. We're working on this. It's going to focus on the UN failure to implement its resolutions, and it's going to link it with the power that the US has with its veto power, which means the US, through its veto power, is rendering the UN completely irrelevant as a body as well. So we're going to try to see what should change inside the UN for the law to be applied. We'll also talk a lot about the refugee issue, because it's key and people need to understand how key the right of the refugee is when it comes to Palestine. And then we're working the next few weeks on like just finalizing a good proposal. We've got already like really good like sort of news. We know like Noam Chomsky is going to come and talk about the US role in sort of Palestine. Ilan Pape would probably talk about settler colonialism. We've got good news on the jury as well. I was talking today with Dennis Banks, one of the co-founder of the Indian American movement, that is going to be taking part as a jury member. We'll have people probably from the civil rights movement, such as Alice Walker and Angela Davis. So I think it could be, because it's in New York and it's sort of the heart of the beast, it could be our most powerful session to date, inshallah.
Inshallah. And this will take me to my last question. So from Vietnam to South America to Palestine, what do you think the limitations or the challenges facing the Russell Tribunal on Palestine, you know, if we compare it with the Vietnamese tribunal or South America?
I think it's we really, you know, the tribunal in Vietnam and on South America, we're not that long ago, but I think we do are in totally different epoch. You know, even if it was like, what, 30, 40 years ago, things have changed so much with the media and the internet, and so there's really broader possibilities for us, I think. But what we do want actually to show that, and it's important that there is this continuation between Vietnam and Latin America and now Palestine, that it is all interlinked, and the Palestine question is crucial to understanding sort of the world we live in. And I think the finding the right solution for the Palestine question could be sort of a stepstone in how we see the world. You know, what type of world we want to live in, what type of society we want to be taking part in, and so we do think there's a strong link between pretty much any historical event, and it's mostly imperialism and the fact that, you know, people are trying to sort of repress civil society. But I think it's changing, and we've got so many more tools in our hands that the tribunal, I mean, in the US will be the last session, and I think, inshallah, again, the ripples of the tribunals will be felt in the years to come, because hopefully civil society will embrace our work, our findings, and work together for a really global and international movement.
Well, Frank Barat, thank you so much. He's the coordinator of the Russell Tribunal on Palestine. It's a citizen initiative for raising awareness of the responsibility of the international community to stop the Israeli apartheid and stop the violation of international law against Palestinian people. We thank you again. Welcome to CKUT.
Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot.